Welcome to Taboo Topic. I'm your host, Ken Drew. This is your weekend review edition, where I give the top to three, four stores I found interesting. Hopefully you do too. Now, the last several weeks, I had a couple friends participate and give their stories so we can react to, but they won't be available this week. In which case, it's just me today, baby. You just have to put up with me. I know, the show must go on, though. We'll take a look into the education world. Are we seeing progress with diminishing requirements and segregating kids? Oh yeah, segregation, and that's not the segregation you're thinking of. Not as today's standard as far as unvaccinated versus vaccinated. It's a different kind of segregation. The segregation you probably heard about in your history class. Oh, that's right. And also, we're going to look into what makes Biden's trillions of dollars of spending proposals controversial, especially the infrastructure bill that just got passed in the Senate. Then last but not least, we'll finish off with talking about the legacy of Bobby Bowden, who passed away at age 92 this week. And if you don't know who he is, he's a college football head coach, a legend. Anyways, before we get the party started, I want to remind everyone you can read featured newsletters by typing in the URL at kenjin296.substack.com. I repeat, kenjin296.substack.com. Spell the word engine, put the letter K in front of the word engine, then you can get Kenjin, one word, 296.substack.com. You can also follow me on Instagram by typing in Kenjin_Express. I repeat, Kenjin_Express. Common spelling. And then last but not least, you can follow me on Facebook. Just type in Taboo Topic. Look for the logo that says Honesty Equals Understanding. This is Taboo Topic, where we dare to question the narrative and think out loud. A place where nobody is safe. And before we go any further, we'll take a short break. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Taboo Topic with your weekend review edition. I'm your host, Ken Drew. Before getting started, as usual, I have to ask, how's your week? Let me know through the social media platforms mentioned earlier. That said, we'll get started in Oregon. Oregon is a blue-controlled state. They have their Congress shaded in blue, including governorship. And you may ask yourself, why am I bringing this up? Well, because this week it's come to light, the state has officially made into law that bans any requirements for high school students to be tested on their math, reading, and writing skills. So, if you're a high school student in Oregon, congratulations on not having to prove if you can read, write, or do math. Congratulations. Your life is a lot easier now. The question, as far as why they went this route, well, allow me to go take a script right out of the Oregonian. It says here, suspending the reading, writing, and math proficiency requirements while the state develops new graduation status will benefit Oregon's Black, Latino, Latina, Latinx, Indigenous, Asian, Pacific Islander, Tribal, and students of color. Leaders from those communities have advocated time and time again for equitable graduation standards, along with expanded learning opportunities and supports. Boyles wrote that. Charles Boyles. He is a communications director. And he's the one that made the statement, not Governor Kate Brown. But as Oregonian puts it, Governor Kate Brown, she doesn't want to talk about it. Now, apparently, this is supposedly a 5-year deal. And if you wonder if they were going to use that time to provide a resource to those groups they claimed this benefited from, as to why they halted the requirements, so when they started back up, they were ready to go like they claimed this is for, you'd be disappointed. You'd be disappointed. There is no legislation at this moment that would actually expand the resources for people of color, supposedly. Now, what else are proponents saying about this? Let's go back to the Oregonian. It says here, proponents said the state needed to pause Oregon's high school graduation requirements in place since 2009, but already suspended during the pandemic until at least the class of 2024 graduates in order for leaders to reexamine its graduation requirements. Recommendations for new students are due to the legislature and Oregon Board of Education by September 2022. However, says the Oregon education officials have long insisted they would not impose new graduation requirements on students who have already begun high school. New requirements would not take effect until class of 2027 at the very earliest. That means that at least five more classes could be expected to graduate without needing to demonstrate proficiency in math and writing. Okay, so if they wanted to talk about updating the graduation requirements, what exactly are they wanting to update as far as graduation requirements? Let's go back to the Oregonian. Much of the criticism of the graduation requirements was targeted at standardized tests. Yet Oregon, unlike many other states, did not require students to pass a particular standardized test or any test at all. So students could not, they didn't have to pass a specific standardized test. But according to Oregonian, students could demonstrate their ability to use English and do math via five different tests or by completing an in-depth classroom project judged by their own teachers. Now, this is done quietly, in the dark. And if you ask them why there's little noise about this, they refer to system failures. That's why there wasn't much transparency. That's what they claim to be as the reason why. That's the breakdown of the story. As someone who's in the minority community, being ethnically mixed between Hispanic, Hebrew, Scottish English, do these Marxists think we're that dumb? And who's speaking on our behalf that says this is a good idea? Leaders of our communities wanted this? And stop using the term Latinx. It's stupid. As a matter of fact, you don't even have to say the word Latina. Latino, if you know Spanish, covers both genders. You don't have to say Latina or Latinx. Stop using the word Latinx. It's dumb. We hate it. It's a term white Marxists came up with and then pay people from our community to say them. Which is my next question of these air quote leaders from our communities. Did we really choose these leaders? Did we really choose them? Or are they white Marxist puppets? Whose their pocketbooks are China's interest? You're literally producing dumbasses into civilization. I understand that standardized testing is controversial, but they didn't even have one to begin with. Not since 2009. Let the teachers be the judge. Which, to an extent, I agree. After all, they, not the politicians, are the ones in the room with the students. But the lack of standardized tests also lacks the ability to differentiate between good and bad teachers. That is a benefit of standardized testing. Now, they can't even judge their own students because of race? Or is there an ulterior motive? Now, warning, I do not have direct evidence. This is pure conspiratorial speculation. But if I had to connect the dots, what could they benefit from this? Reading in particular teaches critical thinking skills. So if a population couldn't think, it'd be easier to manipulate them perhaps? Easier to tell them what to do because they can't think? We wouldn't want to create pesky little freedom thinkers questioning them. What about writing? Well, writing allows us to communicate our thoughts. So if we can't read, we can't think, therefore, who needs to write anymore? Who needs to communicate? They'll do all the communicating for us. And if you don't know how to do basic arithmetic, you can't use critical thinking skills because you can't read anyway, but you can't use your critical thinking skills to call them out if they, the Marxist elite, the politicians anyway, have you knowing basic mathematics, then they can manipulate numbers to fit a certain narrative, to push a propaganda agenda. You dumb peasant. You colored peasant. That's what's coming across to me right now. That statement from the communications director is super condescending. Again, do you really think we're that dumb? Like we can't keep up with white students? And again, if that was really the case, why not just provide the resources, actually give more resources then? Not only provide more resources, but maybe have a system where you can judge a teacher correctly. Judge a teacher as far as, should this be a teacher? Should this person even be allowed to teach our students? These impressionable young men and women. Now again, I do not have direct proof. That is their intention. I am allowed to have my speculations. This is me connecting the dots, and I'm just calling it how I see it. I could be wrong. My gut says otherwise. They want to dumb down the population. The minority community, we're just pawns at this point. You know why I say that? Because it's going to affect white kids too. It's going to affect them too. They're going to be dumber now too. And it's until 2027. When they revisit the graduation requirements supposedly. I support public school. I support public school systems. I'm a product of that system. I understand there's people out there. There's parents. Who have to send their kids to public school because they just can't afford to have one parent stay at home at least and teach their kids, or they can't afford to send their kids to a private or charter school. I get it. And there's some homes that are abusive. Staying at home would do more harm than good, and their parents don't make enough anyway to send them to a private charter school, so go to a public school. Again, I get it. I benefited from that system. But lately it seems more indefensible. Like, what are y'all thinking? Especially the, air quote, leaders of our community, minority community. Are you really representing us for our best interest? Are you looking out for us? Are you really looking out for us? Are you serving your pocketbooks that they're feeding you? Because if you really were looking out for us, this wouldn't be a conversation right now. Same could be said about the school in Atlanta. Which leads to the next part of the segment here, where the school of Atlanta has garnered headlines. A parent found out an elementary school she had sent her kid to had segregated classrooms. You may ask yourself, what kind of segregation are we talking about? And like I mentioned in my intro, it's the kind of segregation you probably heard at school at some point in your history class. I'll play the story from their local channel. It's only 2 minutes long, but I'm going to let them do the synopsis of the story because I think it's important to hear the mother speak. Because it's really bizarre to even think we're having this conversation in 2021. But anyways, here's a clip from the local station. Here you go.
Lost sleep trying to figure out, like, why would a person do this? Kyla Posey says she was stunned when she learned about classes segregated by race at Mary Lynn Elementary last year, a practice she says was put in place and condoned by Principal Sharon Briscoe.
First, it was just disbelief that I was having this conversation in 2020 with a person that looks just like me, a black woman. It's segregating classrooms. You cannot segregate classrooms. You can't do it.
Posey says she found out the school was putting black students in two separate classes with two separate teachers. The white kids were placed in six classes with six different teachers. The parent says she found this out when she let Briscoe know she wanted her child placed in the classroom of a teacher she thought would be a good fit. Posey says the principal said that wouldn't work.
She said that that's not one of the black classes, and I immediately said, what does that mean?
I was
confused. I asked for more clarification. I was like, we have those in the school? And she proceeded to say that, yes, I have decided that I'm going to place all of the black students in two classes.
Posey says she insisted her child be placed in a class with white students. She says Briscoe explained her child would be isolated.
And I explained to her she shouldn't be isolated or punished because I'm unwilling to go along with your illegal and unethical practice.
The Poseys recorded a call with an assistant principal where they complained about the segregated classes. The administrator confirmed it was the principal's decision and seemed to offer an explanation why the classes were set up this way.
When you got more black kids too, and then some of them are in a class because of the services that they need.
In case anyone was wondering, that was me saying "you peasant" in the middle of the video. I'm not entirely sure about the copyright laws, but I know if I said something, you know, in case it was a thing, at least that won't be an issue anymore. But anyways, segregation? It's cool again, guys. It's cool. It's not coming from a white principal either. Oh, goodness, no. Imagine if you had a white principal doing this. The media would have lost their minds. Their heads would have exploded to a million pieces. There would have been a malfunction in their brains. I do not compute. Nah, this is and it's not even a predominant black school either. Six classes for white students and two classrooms for black students? That's just bizarre. And like the mother said, this is a black principal that did this, who made this decision. And she's not being labeled a racist? If the mother could have get the better teacher because of her daughter's skin color, to me it says that the good teacher is in the white classroom. Therefore, the school is literally holding students, black students in particular, back because of their skin color. And this was the decision of a black principal. This goes against the very reason why MLK, Martin Luther King Jr., led the civil rights movement. It was a call for equal opportunity. Brown versus the Board of Education opened the door for people of color, people in the minority community, to have the same opportunities as their white counterparts. Man, this goes against everything I was taught from the era I was produced from the public school system. I want people to know that. With public schools, at least from my experience, it hasn't always been this way. There was a time we were taught that skin color should be the last thing you should be focused on when you get to know someone. And we really didn't know there's a difference of skin color until, obviously, the conversation of slavery, the civil rights movement, came about. That's when we were taught that there's a difference in our skin colors. And even then, we were taught based on our history, that's a big no-no. We don't want to discriminate people based off people's skin color, black or white, Hispanic, whatever. That was the whole point of the civil rights movement, right? Providing that equal opportunity. This is regression at this point. For some reason, we're regressing. It's not the racist Trump voters doing this. It's these Marxists that have hijacked liberalism. These Marxists will say they aren't. The majority of them, anyway. Some have taken the mask off completely. Pun intended for the time period we're in. But the majority of them, they'll say they aren't Marxist. They're progressives. Liberals. You know what? Maybe you are. Let's give you benefit of the doubt for 1 second. Look at what you're doing. Reread history if you must. Please reread history, as a matter of fact. I implore you. Because everything you're pushing these days is not progress. It goes against the very thing you claim to be against. I hate to say this, but wake up. When it's my turn to have kids, my turn to be a father. It pains me to say this, but I don't think I'll send them to a public school. By the grace of God, may it give me strength to work multiple jobs if I have to. If I have to pay for that charter or private school, I will. I'm even open to homeschooling my kids. They will learn to think. Use basic reading skills, arithmetic, and writing. Additionally, they will have an education where nobody cares about the color of their skin or ethnic background. The people that I will put my kid into, the environment I want him in or her in, those people will make sure that those students, regardless of the background, will get the best education. And if it's a charter or private school, the best teachers. That is a better America. A better education system. Public schools. Y'all need to up your game with this rise of interest of school choice. Because at this rate, you won't even have enough students to run any educational institution. And I implore you to please listen to the parents. Because there are parents that have to send their kids to public school. There's kids, there's children like my younger self, who need to be put in that environment. They need to get out of their house. Please don't do this. Please stop doing this, I should say. You're already doing it, but please stop. Let's go back to focusing on things that matter. Let's go back to the things that matter. And let's go back to the basics. Let's promote freedom of thought. Let's promote that. If you don't have a society questioning you, there's no need for speech anymore. Which goes back to my speculation. It's like, well, shoot. If you have a dumbed down population, where you tell them what to think and what to say. Who needs free speech anymore? Go back to the basics, guys. Public school, go back to the basics. That'll do it for this segment. We'll be back after a short break. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Taboo Topic. I'm your host, Ken Drew. Thank you for putting up with me thus far. If you can believe it, we're one episode away from reaching 20. 2-0. That'll be this Sunday. I know, I didn't do one last week, and I apologize. I got caught up with life last week, and I couldn't record. But this week, I rest assured, there will be an episode. There will be a Straight Talk Jesus episode. So be on the lookout for that. With that said, ladies and gentlemen, let's get into Biden's spending spree. The Senate this week passed an infrastructure bill worth up to almost $1.2 trillion. Dollars. Hurts me to even say that. This is part of Joe Biden's Build Back Better agenda. It passed with 69 votes, with 31 opposed. At least 19 Republicans broke party lines, with Mitch McConnell being one of those 19. What's in this bill exactly? The synopsis in the White House and corporate media will say that this bill includes a $550 billion in new federal investment in America's roads and bridges, water infrastructure, resilience, internet, and more. The Bipartisan Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act will grow the economy, enhance our competitiveness, create good jobs, and make our economy more sustainable, resilient, and just. Makes the largest federal investment in public transit ever. This includes the largest federal investment in passenger rail since the creation of Amtrak. Makes the single largest dedicated bridge investment since the construction of the interstate highway system. Makes the largest investment in clean drinking water and wastewater infrastructure in American industry, delivering clean water to millions of families. Ensures every American has access to reliable high-speed internet. And also helps tackle us the climate crisis by making the large investment in clean energy transmission and EV infrastructure in history, electrifying thousands of school and transit buses across the country, and creating a new grid deployment authority to build a resilient, clean, 21st century electric grid. That was straight from whitehouse.gov. Don't take my word for it. It has not made it to the president's desk yet. It's in Nancy Pelosi's hand for right now. Additionally, the Democrats want to pass a budget that includes $3.5 trillion. It's a massive investment in social programs and climate policy. What exactly does that entail? According to CNBC, it includes expansions of paid family and medical leave, a buildup of child care programs, extensions of household tax credits, including the enhanced child tax credit implemented during the pandemic, an expansion of Medicare benefits to include dental, vision, and hearing, and a reduction in the Medicare eligibility age, an extension of increased Affordable Care Act subsidies, universal pre-K, tuition-free community college, tax incentives and grants to encourage adoption of green energy manufacturing and transportation, polluter fees on methane and carbon, which, for those who don't know what that means, it's translated, you probably heard of the gas tax, and it's been criticized as a tax on the poor. Anyways, the $3.5 trillion budget includes a consumer rebates to encourage clean energy weatherization in homes, funded to increase the number of electric vehicles in the federal fleet. That is what's in the $3.5 trillion, supposedly. Now, how do these Democrats plan on paying for all this? CNBC wrote that Democrats aim to pay for their spending plan through corporate and individual tax reform, along with increased IRS enforcement of existing rates. In a statement, Senate Finance Committee Chairman Senator Ron Wyden from Oregon, said revenue raising plans will fall into four categories: multinational corporations, the wealthiest individuals, enforcement against wealthy tax cheats, and savings from other programs. This means there's going to be tax hikes, which if you look at the current tax laws passed in 2017, tax rates are 21%, which originally was 35%, and the top individual rate is now at 37% as opposed to 39.6%. They want to put that back to 39.6% for the top individual rates with this current budget, and they also want to increase the corporate tax rate from 21% to 28%. This budget, though, is already in trouble. Joe Manchin, for example, spoke his reluctance to vote on this bill. And I quote, "I do not believe that $3.5 trillion is where we should be going based on what we have going on with inflation, what we have with the national debt, the obligations we have, and the unknown with COVID-19 Delta virus." He's also said adding trillions of dollars more to nearly $29 trillion of national debt without any consideration of the negative effects of our children and grandchildren is one of those decisions that has become far too easy in Washington. Given this current state of the economic recovery, it is simply irresponsible to continue spending at levels more suited to respond to a Great Depression or Great Recession, not an economy that is on the verge of overheating. More importantly, I firmly believe that continuing to spend at irresponsible levels puts at risk our nation's ability to respond to the unforeseen crisis our country could face. Another senator who's in opposition, Senator from Arizona, Kristen Sinema, has come out in opposition stating, While I support beginning this process, I do not support a bill that costs $3.5 trillion. That would be two Democrats that would block the budget from being passed, as they're doing this through the budget reconciliation, which would allow the Senate to pass the budget on a simple majority, which the Democrats hold a majority right now. Even though it's 50-50, the Vice President, who's a Democrat, will be the tiebreaker, thus giving the Democrats the majority technically. That said, here's what comes to my mind. For the infrastructure bill, remember, these are two separate bills, the infrastructure bill and the budget. And they're trying to pass both of them so President Biden can sign them on to law, whatnot, etc. But for the infrastructure portion, if it's $1.2 trillion and $550 billion is going to be dedicated towards infrastructure, that means it's roughly around $450 billion. Ish being left on the table. Where's that going? I haven't found any information so far that tells me the other $450 billion in this $1.2 trillion infrastructure deal. There's no information as far as where that money is going to go. And I'm surprised. Actually, no, I shouldn't be surprised. It's the media, CNN, CNBC, they're more interested in serving their elite class in China. But regardless, Fox News at least, I'm surprised they haven't actually tried to figure this out. It is a 2,700 page bill. So I understand there's a lot of reading involved, and even I myself probably wouldn't take the time to read it. But it reminds me of when the Affordable Care Act was passed and Nancy Pelosi said, "We'll know it's in the bill once we pass it." And we all know what a disaster that turned out to be. So I'm wondering what disaster could entail in the $450 billion left over. My guess is, a strong hunch, based on the criticisms I've heard, it's not going to go towards infrastructure. Which, earlier this year, Republicans proposed an infrastructure bill that was roughly the same right now, the $550 billion now. I think it was actually $600 billion towards infrastructure. The portion of the media in the White House will talk about is the $500 billion. $550 billion. Which, if we were to focus on that specifically, good on them. Not really anything there I could disagree with, at least surface view. But again, I'm not understanding, or I just don't know where the rest of that money is going towards. And when I connect the dots, I can see why Republicans did not want to vote this in favor of this bill originally, and have 31 vote against it now. It makes sense why the Republicans earlier this year said, here, we'll give you this instead of the trillions of dollars, because at least with this money, we know it's dedicated towards infrastructure. If the bill is supposed to focus on infrastructure, what was wrong with the Republican version? What's in the bill they don't want us to know? Which we'll get into a little bit of that later on. Some little nifty things I found. But another thing I'm thinking of is, how is the federal government going to decide what's best for the economy at the same time? I say that because part of this deal is to tear down highways and implement electric charging stations across the nation, you know, push the green energy stuff, right? But as far as the tearing down the highways and, you know, try to implement electric charges for vehicles and whatnot, shouldn't that be left to the local and state governments to decide? The bill leaves no room for local discretion. No room. It is worth noting, and this is part of the nifty things I mentioned just a moment ago, it is worth noting there's certain parts that has nothing to do with infrastructure, such as a mileage tax. Other things include criminalizing, and I say this in air quotes, science denial, and making gender identity federal law. Which begs the question, what does that have to do with infrastructure? What does that have to do with infrastructure? It has nothing to do with infrastructure. Riddle me that, Batman. The bill goes after the crypto world too. Now, some say this doesn't really hurt the crypto world in the long run. At least, that's what the media is telling us right now. This is still a bull market for the crypto world. What do I mean by that? Well, one could say this was inevitable given the popularity of these last 4 to 5 years, right? Adding regulations, which really the regulation was to tighten the definition of what a brokerage is. And also they have to start reporting to the IRS, which I'll explain in just a moment. But the beauty of the crypto world was a lack of government involvement. Is what made it appealing. But with this bill, it adds tax responsibility to brokers and perhaps others. Proponents will say the current definition of crypto broker was too vague and could see others get stuck in the regulatory web. Additionally, the bill will call for crypto miners to report specific information about their operations to tax collectors, the IRS, that currently have no access to such figures. Which other concerns include, big concerns mind you, is the ability of certain crypto operators, such as miners, stakers, and software developers who simply don't have customers, to comply with this rule. Gee, that somehow made it into the bill. I wonder why. Because the average Joe is getting in on crypto. They see the losing value of the dollar, so they get into the crypto world. It seems like every time the little guy, the average Joe, Jane, figure something out to better improve their situations so they can become self-sufficient. There goes the government. Whoa, 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 whoa there, cowboy, cowgirl. We don't want you to become too self-reliant. We want you to make sure you need to rely on us. But still, another question, I have to go back to this question of, what does that have to do with infrastructure? And big concerns, air quotes, tells me there's going to be future legal battles. Another example, how bureaucrats don't know what the hell they're doing. Now let's move over to the budget plan. It's basically a Marxist wish list. The only part I remotely agree with is with the tax incentive for companies to switch to green energy. This would allow the market to adjust accordingly without shocking the system into an economic hardship. As if we weren't one in already. I'm not in favor of a nanny state. Universal pre-K? Do these elite have any idea parents are taking kids out of the public education system? For one of the reasons I mentioned in the last segment? Are they in touch with reality? Are they doing this on purpose to fulfill the Great Reset? The Great Reset to turn America and the rest of the civilized world into Marxist China. I do not have any direct evidence to support those claims of their intentions. Yet, one has to wonder, how will this end? Joe Manchin was right. My generation and my kids and probably their kids, we're going to have to pay for this debt. All this spending. It will hurt us, the voters. Mama pop shop, pop shops, the middle class, lower income families, the working class, it'll hurt us the most. Sure, raise taxes on those terrible 1%ers. You know, as much as we loathe corporations, they do provide jobs. Cutting the tax rate brought back thousands of manufacturing jobs back to the United States. It gave more opportunity for employment to be self-sufficient. And like I mentioned, we're already in an economic hardship because of COVID. Yet they want to raise taxes and add more, such as a mileage tax? Are you really going to start asking people to report how many miles you've driven yearly to the IRS? How or why is it any of your business, Mr. Government? When you are in economic hardship, especially with the inflation rate we're seeing right now, you don't raise taxes. You don't spend more than you make and make our dollar worth less. It's interesting. There's no talk about cutting spending. No talk, which Trump failed to do so in his time too. I gotta give him crap for that too. There's no talk of cutting spending. At one point, I remember it used to be a main talking point for Republicans. And they actually passed a budget where they cut spending. Granted, it was military. But regardless, at least there's conversations about cutting spending in the national debt. Where is this gonna lead us to? And to go back to the infrastructure bill, what's their idea of a science denier? Which I guess science denier and gender identity kind of go hand in hand. Because if it means going against the idea that gender and biological sex are the same, I am denying science somehow? They want to throw people like myself in jail for actually standing up for saying there's only two genders? Only females can breastfeed, only males can produce sperm, only females can carry children? That's worth criminalizing over? You know what? Go ahead and do it. I dare you. Go ahead and do it. You won't shut me up. I will gladly go to jail. Because that's denying science. I'm just not woke enough for these Marxists, I guess. It's centralized in speech. Again, part of Karl Marx's philosophy. Nothing to do with infrastructure. And as a registered Republican, shame on those 19 senators, you rhinos. To sum it up, in D.C. we have rhinos who are Republican by name only, and Marxist, Democrat by name only. Which if... I wonder if these rhinos are Marxist as well. Maybe they're just too lazy to look into the totality of the bill. They have no spine. They may be misguided. Seriously misguided. On what will help them win future elections. Or... just serving their donors. Their loyalty is with their pocketbooks. Which a lot of these donors, their employers is more likely China, let's be real. So are they enabling Marxism by doing this? If anything, they're enablers of Marxism. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. I don't know if we'll survive this. I hope we do. And it hasn't officially reached the president's desk yet. Both of these bills. So that's a plus. I hope. The sane individuals left in Washington, D.C. grow a spine and do the right thing. Do not pass this and get into the president's desk. Hell no. Unbelievable. That said, we'll end the show in the next segment with a heartwarming story. It's unbelievable he passed away, but the passing of college football legend Bobby Bowden. We'll talk about that after this break. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Taboo Topic. I'm your host, Ken Drew. Before going any further, I want to remind everyone you can leave a review no matter what platform you're listening to this podcast from. Hopefully it's a 5-star, but if it's anything below a 5, by all means, leave a review. I want to know how I can better improve the show so I can better serve you. And if it's something really bad, please, I would prefer you DM me personally to the social media platforms I mentioned earlier. Or if you're that ballsy and you want to let the whole world know just how terrible I am, by all means, leave a review for the whole world to see. But we'll start out this segment. I want to finish the show off with a more heartwarming segment. Bobby Bowden. This story hits a little close to home because I grew up an FSU fan. I have a lot of family ties to the university. Thus, it was just natural. I would eventually see Bobby Bowden on TV. I remember watching a Thursday night game, and this is when the football world was starting to embrace playing in the middle of the week, like Thursday night. But in that game, the first half, FSU struggled. By the way, in case you haven't picked up on, FSU stands for Florida State University. Seminoles, that's their mascot. Anyways, the first half they struggled. They had perhaps 10 penalties in the first half alone. Florida State was down. And as the teams were walking to their locker rooms for halftime, I think it was on ESPN. I think it was ESPN. But the ESPN reporter was trying to talk to Bobby Bowden, but the man, the legend himself, was too busy giving an earful to the referee, asking him and demanding an answer as if they were the only ones committing penalties out there. I kid you not. Makes me laugh and chuckle to this day. Now, either he had his team's back, which is a possibility, or he straightened the players out in a halftime speech, maybe both. But regardless of what happened after halftime, FSU won the game, and not another penalty was committed. Shoot, maybe the referees decided to back off the team a little bit as well. Who knows? That's probably my fondest memory that I could think of. Unfortunately, I saw the mediocre years. I saw the very end of his career, the 2000s. I remember Bobby Bowden daring the university to fire him at some point, too. Because they were mediocre at best. They weren't doing so hot. But the university didn't want to fire him. But by insinuating and pressuring him to retire, it was their way of firing him, I suppose. A few years after his retirement, FSU got their championship, which some may say that was Bobby's team. They'll say that's what Bobby did. That's why Bobby did not want to retire, because he knew the kind of team and talent he had. We could speculate, but it doesn't take away from his great success. This man coached for 57 years, 34 with FSU. Could you imagine today? I think Nick Saban may be the only coach, last coach, that may stay at one spot for duration of period, such as FSU or Joe Paterno style, right? Like 20 plus years. 34 years with Florida State. He went on to win two championships in the 90s as a result. I got to experience and watch his last game. It was a bowl game. He finished with a W against the first team he coached for all the way back in 1970, West Virginia. West Virginia. That left him second behind Joe Paterno. Bobby Bowden finished with 357 wins, which equates to 74% win percentage. To put this into perspective, my favorite NFL team, the Panthers, in its 26 years of existence of playing, I should say, we have an average record, literally the definition of average, 50% win rate. Think about that for a moment. Finishing second does not take away from his success. Other accolades include being the first coach in NCAA history to take his team to postseason bowl games in 27 consecutive seasons. In 2012, he was inducted into the university's Hall of Fame. And if you go to FSU's home stadium, you'll see the words engraved Bobby Bowden Field at Doak Campbell Stadium. And here's what's interesting. And granted, I understand, you know, for the most part of his life, he grew up in an era where social media was not a thing, where people didn't have cameras everywhere. So who knows if this would have been true if he actually lived through this era. But in an age where it seems all public figures, sin gets discovered, puts on display, or something controversial about their character, you know, gets put on a screen. You never heard anything like that from Bobby Bowden. He was a man in pursuit of Christ, serving the good Lord. Serving the good Lord and his family. His family includes the people that share his last name, including the people that he married into from his wife, Florida State University family, and the sports world. He lived a great life. And I know this segment sounds more like a eulogy, but I wanted to include this because it is a headline and I think it needs to be talked about more because, well, frankly, there's not enough good heartwarming stories. Not a lot these days anyway, and I figured this is a nice heartwarming story. With that said, may he rest in peace. May God's grace hover his family still on earth. And may his lessons on life be carried out with love, dignity, and respect. For this serves the kingdom of God. We'll be back after this short break to close things out. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Taboo Topic. I am your host, Ken Drew. Thank you for tuning into today's episode. I hope you enjoy the weekend review. If there's stories you want me to look into, by all means, reach out through the social media platforms I mentioned earlier. Just go to the intro, the beginning of the episode, and you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. But thank you so much for tuning into today's episode. Reminder, you can leave a review no matter what platform you listen to this podcast from. With that said, everyone, I hope you have a great rest of your Saturday. And I'll see you tomorrow for the Straight Talk Jesus. Thank you so much.